I looked upward, toward the sky. And there, I saw a hole. The debris shifting just right to reveal the stars, exactly like that day when I'd been with my father. My first time to the surface. It seemed too momentous to be a coincidence.
Spencer,
Embot said.
The Admiral is trying to contact you, but you have your helmet off.
I absently put my helmet back on, still staring at that hole in the debris. That pathway to infinity. Could I hear something out there? Calling to me?
Spencer,
the Admiral said.
How did you survive that blast?
I'm not sure, I answered truthfully.
I suppose I'm going to need to pardon your father now, she said.
You just survived a lifebuster explosion by a few meters, I said. And still all you can think about is that old grudge? The Admiral fell silent. Yes, I could hear the stars come to us.
Spencer, she said, you need to know something about your father. About that day. We've lied, but for your own good.
I know, I said, flipping controls, turning my ship's acclivity ring on its hinges so it pointed downward. My ship rotated so the nose pointed upward. Skyward.
Return to base, the Admiral said. Return to honors and celebration.
I will. Eventually. Their heads are heads of rock. Their hearts set upon rock.
Spencer, there is a defect inside you. Please, you need to come back. Every moment you spend in the sky is a danger to you and to everyone else.
Be different. Set your sights on something higher. My ship doesn't have destructors, I said absently. If I come back crazy, you should be able to shoot me down.
Spin, Ironside said, her voice pained. Don't do this!
Something more grand. Goodbye, Admiral, I said, flipping off the comm. Then I hit the overburn, launching upward. Claim the stars. Chapter 55. I knew it was stupid. The Admiral was right. I should have returned to the base. But I couldn't. Not only because I could hear the stars calling to me, luring me. Not only because of what had happened in that place between heartbeats. I wasn't being controlled by something else. At least I didn't think I was. But I had to know. I had to confront it. I had to see what my father had seen. We soared higher, higher. Up where the atmosphere faded and we could see the planet's curve. Still higher, aiming for that gap through the debris field. I drew closer than I ever had before, and this time, I was struck by how deliberate it all looked. We called it a debris field, but it really wasn't debris. There was a shape to all of this. An intent. Enormous platforms that shined light downward. Others that looked like the shipyards. Together, they formed a sequence of broken shells around our planet. And they had aligned just right to create an opening through them. I passed into that large gap. If I veered too far to the sides, I'd likely be in range of the defensive guns that Cobb had mentioned. But here, traveling through this impromptu corridor, I was safe. As I passed the first layer of debris, Embot said we'd entered space proper, though he also said the line between atmosphere and not was an arbitrary distinction, as the exosphere doesn't end but instead fades. My breath caught in awe as we passed enormous platforms that could have held Alta 1,000 times over or more. They were covered with what appeared to be buildings. Each silent, dark. Millions upon millions of them. People lived up here once, I thought. I soared past several layers. By now we were going at incredible speeds, Mag 55. But without wind resistance, it didn't really matter. Speed was relative in space. I looked away from the platforms, toward the end of the corridor.
Out there were still calm lights.
Spencer, Embot said. I'm detecting radio communication ahead. One of those specks is not a star.
I leaned forward as we passed another layer of debris. Yes. Ahead, I could see a glowing spot that was much closer than the stars. A ship? No, a space station. Shaped like a spinning top, with lights on all sides. Smaller specks moved about it. Ships. I adjusted our course, pointing toward the station. Beneath us, a platform revolved in its orbit, cutting off my sight of the shrinking shape of detritus. Could I get back? Did I even care? I could hear them louder, the voices of the stars. Chatter that didn't come through the radio and didn't form words. The call of the stars. It was Krell communication. They used that place between heartbeats to talk to one another, to communicate instantly. And the minds of thinking machines somehow relied upon the same technology to process quickly. It all required access to that not place, that nowhere. We drew closer to the station. Don't they know it's dangerous? I whispered. That something lives in the nowhere? Don't they know about the eyes? Maybe that's why we only use radio, I thought. Why our ancestors abandoned this advanced communications technology. Our ancestors were frightened of what lived in the nowhere.
I'm confused as to what you mean, Embot said. Though the Krell are using some normal sublight communications, in addition to the superluminal ones. The ordinary ones, I can crack and listen in, working to translate.
I slowed Embot, passing ships that turned toward mine. These didn't appear to be fighters. They were boxy, with large open windows at the front. In that moment, something hit me, like a physical force. It crawled inside my brain, made my vision fuzz. I screamed, sagging in my straps.
Spencer, Embot said. What's wrong? What is happening?
I could only whimper. The pain and impressions. They were sending images. They were trying to overwrite what I was seeing.
Engaging stealth and jamming, Embot said. Spencer, I'm reading unusual signals. Spencer?
The voices vanished. The pain evaporated. I let out a long, relieved sigh.
Don't die, okay?
Embot said.
If you do, I'll probably have to make Raj my pilot. It would be the most logical move, and we'd both hate it so much.
I'm not going to die, I said, leaning back, tapping my helmet against the seat's headrest. I do have a defect, a hole inside me.
Humans have many holes in them. Would you like me to provide you with a list?
Please don't.
Ha ha, that was humor.
I have a hole in my brain, I said. It can see into the nowhere. But they can use it against me. I think my father was shown some kind of mind hologram. When he flew back down to detritus, he saw what the enemy wanted him to. I remembered what he'd said. I will kill you. I will kill you all. He'd been so mournful, so soft. He thought the humans had lost, that his friends were already dead. What he'd seen hadn't been reality. When he blew up his friends, I whispered, he thought he was shooting down the Krell. A small number of the boxy ships approached Embot in the blackness. They struck me as couriers or maybe towing devices. Through the wide glass fronts, I saw creatures that looked vaguely like the drawings we had of Krell. Dark forms in armor with red eyes. Only here, they were bright colors, a perky red and blue, not dark at all. They reminded me a little of the pictures of crabs I'd seen from old Earth during my ancient biology courses. And the armor they wore seemed more like some kind of living apparatus, with open plates on the head portion for the creatures to see out of. The sides of the little ships were stenciled with what looked to be words in a strange language.
Ketos Redgore, Earthen, Listro Listrins,
Embot said, reading the words.
Roughly, in English, that means penitentiary maintenance and containment of earthlings.
Scud. That sounded ominous. Can you tell me what they're saying?
There's some radio chatter nearer the station, he said. But I suspect these ships are communicating using faster-than-light cytonic devices.
Relax what you're doing to shield us, I said, but don't put it down entirely. If I scream again or go crazy, put it back up.
Okay,
Embot said.
You already seem crazy to me, but I guess that's nothing new.
Awareness returned to me, the voices in the darkness of space. I could hear their words, the ones they were sending through the nowhere. I knew them, even without needing a translation, because in that place all languages were one.
It's looking at me, one of the creatures was saying. I think it wants to eat me. I don't like this at all.
It should be incapacitated now,
a communication returned from the space station. And if it's looking at you, it doesn't see you. We are overriding its vision. Tow the ship in for study. That's not a standard DDF model. We're curious how they built it.
I don't want to get anywhere near it, said another one of the creatures. Don't you know how dangerous these things are?
Curious. I looked out of my canopy at a ship drawing closer. Then I made a kind of growling face, baring my teeth. The creature screamed and immediately turned its ship around and fled. The other two tugboat-style ships backed away.
This is a job for fighter drones, one said, not manned ships.
They sounded so scared. Not like the terrible monsters I'd always imagined. I relaxed in my seat.
Would you like me to try to hack their systems?
Embot said. Can you do that?
It's not as easy as it might sound, he said. I have to piggyback on an incoming signal, and then decrypt their passwords and create a dummy login, then transfer files while spoofing an authorized request, breaching local data defense lines, all without tripping any of their alarms.
So, can you do it?
I just did, he said. That was a very long explanation. Beginning data transfer. And they caught me. I've been booted, and security protocol is preventing my re-entry.
Lights flashed on the station, and a moment later, a squadron of small ships ejected from one of the bays on its side. I knew those flight patterns. Krell interceptors. Time to go, I said, grabbing the controls and sweeping us around. Do you think you can navigate us through the debris layers without triggering any of the defense platforms?
Supposedly, the Krell do that each time they attack the planet, he said, so it should be possible.
I hit the overburn, launching us back toward the outer layer of debris. Embot put some directions on my canopy, and I followed, tense for the first bit. We skimmed close to some of the platforms as we weaved toward the planet, but none of them fired at us. I felt strangely alert. The sense of fascination I'd experienced earlier, the draw to seek out what was causing the stars to sing, had faded. It was replaced by stark realism. Coming out here really had been crazy, even for me. But as we wove past another layer of debris, the Krell interceptors fell back. It seemed increasingly that I'd be able to return to the planet safely. Did you get anything? I asked. From their computers?
I started with the station's core orders and worked outward, he said. I didn't get much, but, ooh, you're going to like this.
What? I asked as I hit the overburn, flying back down toward detritus. What did you find?
Answers.
Epilogue. 2 hours later, I sat in the DDF command center, holding a blanket around me with my legs up on my seat. They'd given me Admiral Ironsides' chair. Ever since that moment in the nowhere, I'd felt cold, a chill I couldn't shake, and which the blanket could barely help. My head still pounded, despite the metric ton of painkillers I'd swallowed. A group of important people surrounded my chair, crowding me in.
National Assembly leaders, junior admirals, flight leaders. I was growing confident that they believed I wouldn't turn against them, though at first, after I'd re-entered the atmosphere, they'd been very cautious. The door to the command center opened, and finally Cobb limped in. I'd insisted on waiting until the transport fetched him and brought him back, and until he'd gotten his afternoon cup of coffee. "All right," Ironside said, folding her arms. "Captain Cobb is here. Can we talk now?" I held up a finger. It might have been petty of me, but it felt really good to make Ironside's wait. Besides, there was someone else who deserved to be here before I explained. As we waited, I reached for the radio at my side. "Embot," I said. "Everything all right?"
"I'm trying not to be offended by how the engineers in this hangar are looking at me," he said. "They seem over-eager to rip me apart, but so far, nobody has tried anything."
"That ship is DDF," Ironsides began. "That ship," I said, "will fry all his own systems if you try breaking into him. The DDF will get his tech, but it will be on our terms." The way she looked, red-faced, when I said it, was also extremely satisfying. But she didn't challenge me any further. Finally, the door opened again, and Jorgen entered. He was actually smiling, and it occurred to me that the expression, while pleasant, didn't really suit him. He just looked more like himself when he was being serious. He wasn't the one we'd been waiting for, however. Instead, it was the lanky young man Jorgen had been sent to fetch. Rig grinned like a fool as he stepped into the room. Then he blushed as the flight leaders and admirals parted for him, saluting. Though Ironsides was angry that Rig and I hadn't turned the ship in immediately, Mo seemed to agree that when working with an insane AI that threatened to destroy itself, Rig had performed admirably in getting technology to the DDF.
"Now, will you talk?" Ironsides demanded.
"The Krell are not what we think," I said. "My ship downloaded some of their databases and discovered what happened before our ancestors landed here on Detritus. There was a war, a vast intergalactic one, humans against aliens."
"Against the Krell," Ironsides said.
"There were no Krell at the start of it," I said. "Just us versus the galaxy. And humankind lost. The victors were a coalition of aliens who, as best Embot and I can tell, considered humankind too brutal, too uncivilized, and too aggressive to be allowed to be part of the intergalactic community. They demanded that all human fleets, independent or not, surrender to their authority. Our ancestors, on the Defiant and its small fleet, considered themselves innocent. They weren't part of the war. But when they refused to turn themselves in, the alien coalition sent a group to capture or contain them. That is what we call the Krell." I closed my eyes. "They cornered us. And, after a conflict on board the Defiant, my great-grandmother brought us here, to Detritus, a planet we knew about, but which had been abandoned centuries before. The Krell followed us and set up a station to watch us once we crashed. They're not murderous aliens. They're prison guards, a force designed to keep humankind trapped here, as some of the aliens are absolutely sure we will try to conquer the galaxy if we're ever allowed to get back into space. The Lifebusters were designed to annihilate our civilization if we seem to be getting close to escaping Detritus. But most of the time they attacked, I don't think they were trying to actually destroy us. They have laws against destroying a species entirely. They consider this planet like a preserve for humankind. They sent ships to keep us focused on the fight, to occupy us, so we wouldn't have time to research how to escape. And while the fighters always tried to keep our fleet down to size, they were only authorized to use a certain amount of force against us, lest they accidentally cause us to go extinct." I shivered, despite the blanket. "Something changed recently, however," I said. "It seems this last bomb really was meant to destroy us.
there have been politics about how much they should tolerate from us. They tried to destroy Alta and Igneous, but we defeated them. That has them scared.
Great! Wonderful! Ironside said, folding her arms.
But this doesn't change much. We know why the Krell are attacking, but they're still a superior force. This will only make them more determined to extinguish us.
Maybe, I said. But the aliens who contain us? They aren't warriors. They're prison guards, who fly mostly unmanned drones that don't have to fight well because they can overwhelm us with numbers.
Which is still the case, Ironside said. We are low on resources. While they have better technology and an orbital fleet, we're still basically doomed.
This is true, I said.
Then why are you smiling?
Ironsides demanded. Because, I said, I can hear what they're saying to each other. And any time you know what your enemy is going to do, you have an advantage. They think we're trapped on this planet.
Aren't we?
Jorgen asked. I shivered again and thought of that moment when I'd been nowhere. The Krell knew they had to target any of us who flew too well because they knew about the defect. They knew that someone who had it might be able to do as I'd done. I didn't know how I'd teleported my ship. I didn't know if I dared do it again. But I knew, at the same time, that Gran-Gran was right. Using that power was the key to survival, to escaping this planet, to being truly defiant.
This has been an Audible Studios production of Skyward, written by Brandon Sanderson, performed by Susie Jackson, executive producers Steve Feldberg and Mike Charzik, producer Kat Lambricks, copyright 2018 by Dragonsteel Entertainment, LLC, sound recording copyright 2018 by Audible, Inc. Audible Studios is a division of Audible, Inc.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.